Hello, I am Joshua P. Warren, and this is Joshua P. Warren Daily. And it is May 3rd, 2020. Happy National Paranormal Day. Happy National Paranormal Day. Do you know what National Paranormal Day is? Well, listen, years ago, people started saying this to me on May the 3rd. Happy Paranormal Day! And I had no idea what the hell they were talking about. And just today, once again, somebody says, Happy National Paranormal Day. And I decided, I'm going to get to the bottom of this. What is this National Paranormal Day? And here is what I found. National Paranormal Day, which occurs on May 3rd, is a novelty unofficial holiday meant to celebrate and encourage paranormal phenomenon. Fittingly enough, the origins of National Paranormal Day are a mystery. So, why is it marked on May the 3rd of each year, as no significant paranormal event appears to have happened on that day? The radio show Coast to Coast AM theorizes, however, this date may have been chosen because Charles Fort, an influential author and researcher of the paranormal, died on that day in 1932. So they claim here that the first time National Paranormal Day was mentioned was, was mentioned on Twitter in 2009. And so that's as much as we know about the origins of National Paranormal Day. If you know more about it, please feel free to contact me and let me know. But you know what? It seems like a good opportunity for you to just go out and get into some mischief. And so if you do that tonight, be sure to let me know what you get into. Let me know what happens to you. There is no shortage of paranormal stuff in the news. We're going to talk about a lot of it here in this podcast today. You may have seen I posted an article about a free haunted house available in Louisiana, giving this house away. This actually, speaking of Coast to Coast, I first learned about it from the Coast to Coast AM website. Headline, free haunted house available in Louisiana. Here's the story. Now, there's a picture, and it looks like an old, probably like maybe late 1800s, creepy old house. Says here, after reported attempts to sell the residence proved futile, the owners of a purportedly haunted house in Louisiana is now giving the home away for free. Realtor Sylvia McLean took to Facebook earlier this year with the unbelievable offer on the two-story, four-bedroom home in the community of Yonesville. Although her post did not mention the site's spooky reputation, people responding to the announcement reportedly revealed that the house is seemingly the home to the ghost of an old woman who frequently makes her presence felt. And then it goes on to say, specifically, Dawn Valor Declos explained that she used to live in the home and believes the spirit might be that of her great-grandmother Adele. Quote, she's not menacing at all, her relative wrote, revealing that the woman was a mere 4 feet 9 inches and weighed about 100 pounds. According to Dawn, her great-grandmother had a peculiar habit of, quote, always digging in the pots. Like when you have something on the stove and someone goes and looks in the pot and stirs it around, end quote. And following her passing, the woman's spirit seemingly continued the practice as, quote, we used to hear her all the time jangling the pots, and when we had something on the stove, you could hear somebody picking up the lid, but there was nobody in the kitchen, end quote. Meanwhile, other residents of the community chimed in on Facebook with their own spooky stories from staying at the home. One person said, quote, I experienced 3 things there that could not be explained, and my friend that lived there had more than that, end quote. So here's the most interesting part of this story, though. It says, while prospective homeowners with an appreciation for the paranormal may think the prospect of getting a haunted house for free is quite the steal, the deal comes with something of a catch. And that's because the owners are only giving away the residence itself. And interested parties will have to physically move the building off of the property. Now, again, folks, we're talking about a big old rickety two-story building. It says the entire process of relocating the residence and subsequently refurbishing the site is estimated to cost approximately $80,000. And, of course, it's uncertain whether or not Adele would come along with the house once it has been moved. So I have had people contacting me saying, oh, Josh, are you going to buy it? Are you going to get this house? Well, if they said, come have this free house on this free piece of property, you know what? I might just be tempted to jump on an airplane and go down there and just claim that thing. You never know. But if I have to move that house and spend $80,000, I want to make damn sure Adele comes with it. It'd just be your luck, wouldn't it? You move that thing. Oh, we'll bring it here to Las Vegas. We're going to put that thing on the Las Vegas Strip. And you go in there every night, it's just crickets. No, Adele decided to stay in Louisiana. So if you can send me Adele, we'll talk. But no, I don't have any plans to claim the house anytime soon. Funny story, though, isn't it? You know somebody's going to do it. Maybe Zach will go get it. Who knows? But so, yes, that's today, National Paranormal Day, apparently. And, of course, anything that helps to honor the legacy and the work of Charles Fort, I'm behind it. Charles Fort was really a great pioneer when it comes to the stuff that people like myself, people who do the paranormal, people like myself, owe a lot to Charles Fort. And tomorrow is Star Wars Day, because it's May the 4th. Huh? Why is that Star Wars Day? May the 4th be with you. Yeah, see, that's, seriously, fans, they came up with that. All right, fine, so it's a big time to celebrate Star Wars. Works for me, you know, I wrote this book, Use the Force, A Jedi's Guide to the Law of Attraction. It's a wonderful opportunity for me to talk about my book every year on May the 4th. Talk about using the Force to become a Jedi. And then the next day, May the 5th, it's time to get shit-faced, because it's Cinco de Mayo, which, of course, it commemorates the Mexican Army's victory over the French Empire at the Battle of Puebla on May 5th of 1862. But we don't really care anything about that in this country. What we do is we use that as an opportunity to pop open a bottle of tequila and get fucked up. That's what that holiday means to us. So, hopefully, if you're on lockdown, and I presume you are, you have somewhere in there in your stockpile a jug of tequila. So, 3 days of celebration, I guess. May 3rd, Star Wars Day. May 3rd is Paranormal Day. May 4th, Star Wars Day. May 5th is, well, Tequila Day. It almost seems like my own personal 3-day holiday. I never really thought about that before. Maybe we should just call May 5th, you know, Joshua P. Warren Day, and we'll just make it a complete sweep there. So, look, there is a lot happening. My goodness. I sat down and I said, what do I want to talk about in this podcast? And I saw, there's a lot. There is a lot to talk about. Well, for one thing, let's start with the fact that yesterday there was another big earthquake and Puerto Rico. And I don't know if you've kept tabs on this, but Puerto Rico has been suffering from a long series of earthquakes. It's been going on for quite a while now. And it's the weirdest thing. You may remember a couple years ago when I officially moved out of Puerto Rico, around that period of time, right after Hurricane Maria had happened, I, for a long time, was going on just about every radio show out there. I was being invited to speak everywhere and tell stories about what it was like in Puerto Rico leading up to that just terrible storm. Because I had been documenting in Puerto Rico a series of paranormal occurrences that had led me to predict that there was about to be a big shift there and that some bad shit was going to happen. And this is very similar to the Mothman phenomenon. Of course, and what I mean by that is you had the situation in 1967, I believe it was, in Point Pleasant, West Virginia, and that vicinity, where people had these sightings of the Mothman, but also poltergeist type activity and flying saucers and all kinds of weird things that were happening. And it all led up to this crescendo, a climax, which was the collapse of the Silver Bridge, in which, over 40 people died right near Christmas time. It was a terrible tragedy. I believe it's to this day the largest bridge disaster we've had in the United States. And so there is this very eerie and creepy phenomenon of harbingers of doom that sometimes you just have a flap of something weird that comes and goes. And in other cases, you have certain elements of this flap which start to become reminiscent of a harbinger of doom. And in Puerto Rico, I was especially documenting all these sightings of this creature that looked very similar to the Mothman called the Gargoyle, which is just Spanish for gargoyle, because this is like a 6-foot-tall gargoyle, is how people would talk about the Gargoyle. And what's funny is, I don't think I ever talked to anybody in Puerto Rico who told me about the Gargoyle who knew about Mothman. They didn't know about that story. And yet, I would talk to people, and they would give me all of these incredibly similar descriptions of the Gargoyle and how the Gargoyle would behave. And I mean, there's a whole series of character traits and habits that this creature had that reminded me so much of Mothman. So you had particular types of apparitions that were appearing. There was an increase in UFO sightings. You had the Gargoyle flying around. I mean, there was just a combination of all kinds of weird stuff. I can't even remember all the things that I was documenting at that point that led me to believe that something bad was going to happen in Puerto Rico. And anybody who knows me down there could tell you that I was saying, guys, take this as a warning. I'm afraid there's a good chance this is all leading up to something really dramatic and terrible that's going to happen here in the physical environment. And I was fortunate because I left right before Hurricane Maria hit. I was gone for months, and then I came back and got what was left of my belongings and closed up shop down there for good. But that was just the beginning. Hurricane Maria, that was when the big shift happened, the tragic shift. And after that, it's just been one thing after another. I mean, their infrastructure is still a wreck down there. The emergency resources and that whole situation became so abused and corrupt that the people revolted and stormed San Juan and basically forced the governor to resign. They forced him out of the governor's mansion. So there was all this political upheaval. And then the earthquakes started kicking in, and they have the power is out half the time. There are all these sanitation problems. I mean, it's really just been one bad thing after another. And the earthquakes that are hitting now, like the one that hit yesterday, I mean, it's the kind of earthquakes like there's rubble in the street. I mean, my friend Margarita was posting on her Facebook page pictures of one particular town called Ponce, which is sort of right in the middle of the south side of the island. And you have rubble in the streets, these shots inside of liquor stores and wine stores with just bottles, broken bottles and liquid all over the place. Looked like there was a picture inside of a Walmart or a Sam's Club with just all the giant TVs and appliances are all just tumbled off in piles on the floor. I mean, that level of shaking. And we're talking about some of these buildings in Puerto Rico that have been there since the 1500s. And I don't know if all these buildings are going to make it. And then you also have, of course, the threat of a tsunami there. So I really feel sorry for what the people of Puerto Rico are continuing to go through. And I also feel very blessed that Lauren and I had so much wonderful time down there and were able to invite so many fantastic friends down there for expeditions and retreats and stuff while we had that beautiful window, because that's gone for the foreseeable future. And so that's it definitely kind of makes the hair stand up on your arms and the back of your neck when you look at that series of events that could have, led us, or at least it led me to predict that there were bad things that were going to happen, and sure as hell, it worked just like it has historically. Every time you can see these patterns if you're open-minded and you know what to look for. In the meantime, of course, we're getting more reaction to the Pentagon officially coming out and verifying the legitimacy of the UFO footage that I talked about in my last podcast. And you know how I've said over and over again that one of the leading proponents behind this footage and what the military and the Pentagon have been collecting and how that should be released or disclosed to the public is Senator Harry Reid, who was the Senate Majority Leader about 10 years ago when a lot of very serious research was being done with the ATIP project. He said, quote, "It only scratches the surface." That's what he said about these videos. As a matter of fact, he tweeted about it, and here is a little bit from a CNN piece. He said, quote, "I'm glad the Pentagon is finally releasing this footage, but it only scratches the surface of research and materials available. The U.S. needs to take a serious scientific look at this and any potential national security implications. The American people deserve to be informed," end quote. Wow, how do you like that, huh? So here we have the Pentagon saying, yes, it's true, it's real. We've known that. Okay. Have you been waiting for the Pentagon to come out and admit, well, you can consider yourself having gotten a 3-year heads up, because, about 3 years ago or whatever, I and a lot of other people were telling you, guys, this is real. And talking to you about Senator Harry Reid's letter that he wrote to the Department of Defense that was disclosed and all that. So, yeah, it only scratches the surface, says Senator Harry Reid. And again, this guy was the Senate Majority Leader. And in fact, to show you what an impact that this is apparently making around the world, listen to this story from the Japan Times. Japan Defense Ministry to draft UFO protocols in response to U.S. footage. Yeah, Japan is drafting protocols on how its military should respond to UFO encounters. This is no bullshit, folks. It says here, the Defense Ministry plans to draw up protocols for UFO encounters in light of the U.S. Defense Department's recent decision to release videos of the mysterious objects. The ministry will consider procedures for responding to, recording, and reporting on UFO encounters, as their unknown nature might cause confusion among self-defense forces pilots. The videos released Monday by the U.S. Defense Department were taken in 2004 and 2015. Some show an elliptical flying object with unprecedented speed and maneuverability. Defense Minister Taro Kono said Tuesday that SDF pilots have never encountered UFOs, but that the ministry will develop protocols for the possibility. And then they go on talking about, you know, how they're going to proceed. Now, and by the way, I have a big problem believing that the Japanese have never encountered any of these UFOs, but it's giving them a good excuse, isn't it, for them to move forward with their protocols, because they are directly saying, in light of the fact that the United States has released this stuff, well, they are preparing their protocol. I don't know. I think that all these governments probably already have some kind of a protocol in place. But this is just giving everybody an opportunity to figure out their own way of sort of easing into this discussion. But how interesting is this? You see how gradually the world is changing into this UFO disclosure mindset? And there's no doubt about it. I mean, if you see how people are flipping out over this coronavirus stuff, I mean, it calls into great question whether or not our society could handle an alien popping up on CNN, right? I mean, like, seriously, I don't know if at this point I've been so disappointed in how easy it is to manipulate the general public with fear that I might not even vote for showing the alien on TV at this point. I might be like, you know what? These people are not going to be able to handle it. They're going to flip out. They're going to flip out, and they're going to panic, and they're going to buy all the toilet paper. And we don't want that happening again. So I don't know, man. It's funny to see this gradual disclosure happening at the same time we're also seeing people flip out and exaggerate and magnify a lot of things and go overboard with the panic. How is all this going to factor out? I don't know. But hey, if the aliens decide that they're going to show up en masse, I guess there's nothing that we can do about that anyway. But to make things even more perplexing, I have continued to receive a lot of messages from people all over the world saying, man, I went outside and I saw something weird. I looked up and I saw what looked like a bright light and then another bright light behind it and then another bright light. And the next thing you know, it looked like a bunch of bright lights on a string being pulled through the sky. And I say, yeah, that's, I know what you're talking about. That is SpaceX's new Starlink satellite array. And I mentioned this several podcasts ago. Get ready. You're gonna start looking up in the sky. They have not. The main media has not done a good job of bringing this to people's attention. Like, by the way, if you look up and you see what appears to be a UFO invasion, these are just a bunch of Elon Musk's toys flying around up there. Wouldn't you think that would be more prevalent in the news to sort of warn people about that and give them a heads up? I haven't really seen it that once when I've turned on the local news. And so we have all these people who are contacting me saying, man, I'm seeing all these lights in a row. But if you listen to this podcast, you know that, yes, this is part of this new satellite array called Starlink that Elon Musk and his guys are putting up there, and it's supposed to eventually bring us much more cost-effective, higher efficiency internet access. That's what they're experimenting with, and eventually there's supposed to be thousands of these things. Like I forget how many now, like 30,000 of these things or something crazy flying around all over the sky, and our whole sky is going to look very, very different. I know I have some friends in South Carolina who said they saw this going over on, I think it was last Tuesday night. I have a friend in Florida who contacted me, and he said, man, let me tell you what I saw. And he beautifully described these lights, you know, in a row and then moving around, because they're not always in a row, by the way. Sometimes they can move out of configuration and then back in a row. They're usually in a row, but not always. But he described it to me, and I said, everybody's contacting me about this. It's, you know, here's what it is. And he goes, okay, and he was real disappointed. And then he contacted me a little later, and he goes, actually, he says, I've looked it up, and I don't think this is what I saw. So, hey, is it possible there's something else flying around out there that looks, you know, similar to Elon Musk's stuff, but is not Elon Musk's stuff? Or what if these are aliens, and they say, oh, how do we cover this up? The aliens are in formation. Tell them it's Elon Musk's stuff. Right? I don't know. How are you supposed to know? But there is something weird about, like, right now of all times, when all this other bizarro stuff is happening, we add into the mix this strange array of lights that nobody's ever seen before that are flying around the world that is getting very little coverage in the mainstream media, so that nobody knows what they are. You'd kind of think it'd be one of those deals where, just for promotional purposes, maybe you'd watch the 6 o'clock news and they'd say, hey kids, we know you're sitting at home bored right now, so tonight at 9 o'clock, go out into your yard and you get to see Elon Musk shit flying by your house. I mean, that would be a fun family activity. Everybody would get together and they get out their lawn chairs and they'd crack open a beer and watch Elon Musk fly by like Santa Claus. But they don't even do that. That's kind of weird, isn't it? So maybe there's something fishy about that as well. At this point, we can believe anything, right? This holographic reality is getting twisted and pulled and warped in every direction possible, and they add a new mirror to the Hall of Mirrors every day, and we're all just trying to figure out what's happening. I guess it's like the story about the scientific chicken, right? Who tells the other chickens, oh, the farmer is not going to eat us. Are you crazy? He loves us. He comes here every day, and he feeds us, and he waters us every day. It's been like that for as long as we can remember. And then one day, the farmer comes in and wrings the chicken's neck. Harvest time. When it's harvest time, it's, you know, boom, it happens fast. Everything happens at once. Is this some kind of a harvest time? Maybe. Maybe. How would we know? We are just ignorant little human beings. We are not omniscient, omnipotent creatures. So, if you needed more to add to this, this can either worry you more or comfort you more. I think it should comfort you more. In my last podcast, I was talking about electromagnetic pulses, EMPs, because I was mentioning how that you can use a Faraday cage, which is a simple metal enclosure, to protect an electrical or electronic device from being fried by some type of a burst of electromagnetic radiation that can either come from a weapon or from Mother Nature, primarily the sun in our case. And there's a headline in Forbes, you know, Forbes, reputable publication there. Forbes headline, Trump moves to protect America from electromagnetic pulse attack. Now, before I tell you a little bit more about this, you know, one of my good friends and mentors, a man I've known for, I don't know, probably close to 20 years, Dr. William R. Forstchen. He is a professor. He is a scholar. He is a New York Times best-selling author, and he is one of those guys who, if he shows up at a party, that he becomes the center of the party the moment he walks in the door. Everybody just wants to gather around him and say, "Tell us stories, Bill," because he has had one of those lives. He has spoken before Congress. He's worked with NASA. His stories go on and on and on. One day I'll just sit here probably and tell you Bill Forstchen stories. Maybe I'll even get him on here to help me tell those stories, because he... Oh, man, he can tell them better than I can. But anyway, Bill Forstchen, he wrote this book, a best-selling novel called One Second After, and it was about what happens to a small American town, actually based upon Black Mountain, North Carolina, right there in western North Carolina. He lives basically right there at Black Mountain and teaches at Montreat College, so he's... Black Mountain is like, it's small town America straight out of a Norman Rockwell type painting. I mean, if you were going to make some Hallmark Christmas movie and you were looking for that old traditional charming town, I would say go to Black Mountain, North Carolina, and that's what you're looking for. So anyway, the idea behind his novel, One Second After, is that... there is an EMP attack, and it wipes out all the power and just about everything that's electrical. And so everybody is instantly reverted basically back to the pioneer days. And chaos ensues. And so he documents the gradual breakdown of society. It's a really gloomy thing to think about, but... Hey, you know, he does a very good, realistic job of illustrating this. And then he even wrote a sequel to it called One Day After, I believe. So Bill Forstchen has been out there talking about the threat from EMPs for a long, long time, and warning that we need to do something about this. And just to clarify a little bit more for you what I'm talking about, an electromagnetic pulse, again, it can be something that happens naturally. So, for example, in 1859, there was this electromagnetic pulse, or EMP, created by a geomagnetic storm, and it's known as the Carrington event, because there was a scientist named Carrington who was studying sunspots, and he was the first one to realize what was happening here. So this is 1859. The biggest EMP in recorded human history hit our planet. And when that occurred, the nice part was that everybody got to look up and see the beautiful Aurora Borealis. The sky was just the most scintillating, spectacular thing you've ever seen. Bad news is, this electromagnetic pulse was so powerful that it was inducing electrical currents in everything metal. So like telegraph lines were shooting sparks and starting fires all over the place. People were getting shocked by being around railroad tracks. Anything that's long and metal is going to produce an electrical current when you have an EMP. And that was something that happened naturally. On the other hand, you can produce an artificial EMP by setting off a nuclear bomb, which brings us to Starfish Prime. This is a good example of that. Starfish Prime was a July 9, 1962 high-altitude nuclear test conducted by the United States. It was a joint effort of the Atomic Energy Commission and the Defense Atomic Support Agency. Basically, what they did was they went out into the Pacific Ocean and they detonated an atomic bomb in outer space. It says it was the largest nuclear test conducted in outer space. So what happened when they went out in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, and they took this bomb up, which for those of you who are bomb geeks, they say it produced a yield equivalent to 1.4 megatons of TNT. About 11 p.m. Hawaii time. Now, it created an amazing red, orange, purple sort of bubble of light in the sky, as you can imagine. But here is exactly what it did. Starfish Prime caused an electromagnetic pulse that was far larger than expected. So much larger that it drove much of the instrumentation off the scale, causing great difficulty in getting accurate measurements. The Starfish Prime electromagnetic pulse also made those effects known to the public by causing electrical damage in Hawaii, which was about 898 miles away from the detonation point, knocking out about 300 streetlights, setting off numerous burglar alarms, and damaging a telephone company microwave link. The EMP damage to the microwave link shut down telephone calls from Kauai to the other Hawaiian islands. So now, this is 1962. Can you imagine, in this day and age, when we are dependent upon these very sensitive, delicate, fragile little electronic components, can you imagine what would happen to our world if we got hit by one of these EM pulses, whether it came from something natural like the sun, or worse, even worse, an attack by another country? God. It's one of those things you don't want to think about. And Bill Forstchen and a lot of others have been out there for a long time saying, guys, we need to think about it. I know nobody wants to think about it, but we need to think about it. And Trump has decided to move on this. Forbes says Trump moves to protect America from electromagnetic pulse attack. I'll read a little bit of this for you. It's not something that many Americans think about, an electromagnetic pulse or EMP attack on the nation's electric grid. However, both peer competitors, Russia and China, and emerging threat countries like North Korea and Iran are perfecting this strategic weapon. The White House is taking this potential threat seriously. On March 26th, President Trump issued executive order on coordinating national resilience to electromagnetic pulses. In an effort to assess the risks of such an attack to critical U.S. infrastructure, preliminary studies indicate that a catastrophic EMP could cripple the U.S. economy and its military. Oh boy. Now think about that. It's bad enough when you have a virus that's coming through and is creating all of these, well, obviously you have some people who are just sick and they can't function, and then everybody else is freaking out and they don't want to function, or they're being ordered not to function, or whatever. But think about if physically nothing worked all of a sudden. You know, if just the lights didn't work, would not come on, The computer doesn't work. The internet doesn't work. The cell phones don't work. And they're not coming back on. I mean, that's one thing you have to think about. When the power goes out, you go, oh, man, that sucks. When the hell is this going to come back on now? And usually you wait. Could be hours. Could be days. Could be weeks. But eventually, the power comes back on. If we get hit by one of these, boom, it's instantaneous. It could happen right now in the middle of this podcast as I speak, as you're listening to it. Suddenly, everything could go out, and it's not coming back on. It is fried. It's done. Everything is going to have to be brand new. Everything's got to be replaced. The entire infrastructure has got to be replaced. We are talking about years and years of survival and vulnerability. And you know me, I'm not a fearmonger, okay? I swear, I'm not trying to freak you out, but I'm also not exaggerating. I'm telling you the truth. And I don't believe that it would be possible for one of these to take out the whole world at one time, though. I think it would probably just take out one part of the world. But, you know, you're talking about very realistically this happening to, just say, our country, especially if it was an attack, if it was designed that way. Because if it were designed that way and somebody took out our grid, we would be completely confused. We wouldn't be able to communicate. We'd be uncoordinated. And it'd be no problem to swoop right in, send in troops, and take this place. You think, oh man, well you have all the military there with their fancy jets and their rockets and their... None of that shit's going to work anymore. Don't you understand? None of that's going to work. So, I guess that's one reason you ought to have your musket and your gunpowder, because that's not going to be affected. But let this whole situation with this COVID thing be a lesson to you that when we get back on our feet, you better start really getting prepared to be as self-sufficient as possible, because things are getting crazy, folks, and I don't know how crazy they're going to get. The only way you can guard anything you have against this is to put it in, again, some type of a Faraday cage, which is a metal enclosure. Now, it's not going to do you a heck of a lot of good to have your cell phone in one of these metal enclosures, because your cell phone might work, but you're not going to have any cell service, and you might not even be able to recharge it, you know. But that's why we say, like, if you get a Sunshine Simple solar generator for your home or whatever, you need to put it inside of a Faraday cage. And if you want instruction on that, like, let's say you have one and you want instruction, all you have to do is contact me and I'll forward it to Mobius. Or right now, if you want to get one of those Sunshine Simple generators, Mobius is going to actually give you a kit to put a Faraday cage around it. So it will be protected. And even if there is an EMP, then it'll still work. And you'll be able to have your own electrical generator there, powered by the sunlight on your back porch. It'll be worth every penny you have at that moment, I guarantee you. It'll be priceless to you. So again, if you're interested in that, be sure to go to joshuapwarren.com. Go to the Curiosity Shop, scroll down to the bottom, and you'll find information there on the Sunshine Simple solar generator, and how you can get one now with one of the Faraday cages. But anyway, I don't mean to frighten you, but let's take some good lessons from what's happening right now as we endure this unprecedented lockdown. And that's another thing, you know, right now, this is a time for us to say, all right, it's a lesson, it's time for us to all get prepared, but hopefully we'll get this economy running again soon so that you'll have enough money to even get prepared for whatever else may come along. I mean, we got to get this economy running ASAP or we're in a lot of trouble. And, a lot of people have been really trying to politicize this situation that we're in right now with this virus. And I understand that. A lot of people are blaming the lockdowns on primarily the Democrat governors, which are generally the most harsh ones. There's a lot to be said for that. But you know what? Now, at this point, even the so-called like liberal media is saying that this lockdown strategy is gonna backfire in a big way. For example, Bret Stephens, who is a journalist with the New York Times and a contributor to MSNBC, which, those are both considered to be, liberal media here in the United States. He went on Bill Maher's show, Real Time, and Bill Maher is no fan of Donald Trump. Even he went on, this guy who writes for the New York Times and MSNBC, he went on the air and he said, quote, "If the Great Depression is what gave us the rise of fascism and a certain chancellor in Germany, what is the next Great Depression going to do to our politics?" Of course, he's alluding to Hitler there. He says, "What happens when you have tens of millions of people who are out of work and desperate, not just economically, but politically? So when people have to start thinking about the balance of risk, if you balance it in one way, people are going to suffer and people are going to die. And that's almost certainly true. But there are risks to simply holding our breath forever and not hurting ourselves." End quote. And then listen to this. I thought this was a particularly good point. Stevens then compared our current strategy to combat the coronavirus to the U.S. involvement in the Vietnam War. He said, quote, "We're trying to destroy the village in order to save it. And I don't remember that ending very well," end quote. So you see, this is not just a political thing. Politics plays a big, big, big role in what's happening. But there are people on all sides of this situation now who are saying, guys, we got to get the economy going here because if we don't, I mean, people are going to start having horrible problems. Like, we're not d dealing with money versus lives. It's lives versus lives. You got to put food on the table. This is an important part of your health and your well-being to have a thriving economy. If you don't believe that, just look at what happens in places that have poor economies. It's, they're terribly unhealthy and people die left and right and disease spreads like crazy. I mean, we have to get this started again, but I really think that's a good point he makes, and I'll repeat it. We're trying to destroy the village in order to save it. So that doesn't make a lot of sense, does it? We've got to bite the bullet. We got to get back in business here. And when things get running as smoothly as possible, you better start getting prepared for what's coming next. I'm telling you. I mean, even if every week or every month you could just make one more purchase, water purification tablets, some kind of freeze-dried food, canned food. I mean, flashlights. Hopefully you'll get a Sunshine Simple generator. I mean, like, just start the slow process of creating an emergency stockpile for you because you just don't know what's going to happen next. And also remember, it doesn't matter what you've got if you can't defend it because you may have, the king's nest all stockpiled there, but if some looters decide to come and take it and you can't defend it, well, what good was that? So, anyway, look, you might say, geez, Josh, you're kind of ending the podcast on a downer. I'm really not, though. What I'm saying is what I've said before, especially since tomorrow is May the 4th day. In order for a new, better world to emerge, the old world has to break down, that things cannot stay the same and improve at once. And so what we are seeing is that the process of things breaking down and transforming is always painful and frustrating, and it makes people irritable and aggressive, and this is to be understood. But we need to let logic guide us through this. We need logical people to start thinking and making good decisions on our behalf. And we need to do whatever we need to do in order to express what logical thinking is, to educate others, and to help them realize that we're going through this together, and we are going to come out better, but when we come out better, it's a good time for you to prepare for the next stage in this transformation, because this transformation we're going through, this may be something that goes on for years and years and years. So I believe if you're the type of person who is on this wavelength, you listen to this podcast, you understand the kinds of things that I'm talking about and that we're all interested in here, I think that you'll be fine. You'll be fine. But be prepared, right? Be prepared. Well, my friends, I believe that's going to do it for this particular edition of the podcast. And as you know, I've said before, if you find this stuff interesting, I hope that you'll share this podcast with others. I don't do this just to talk to myself, you know. I do this podcast because you listen. And the more people who listen, the better for all of us. We'll make a better world. It doesn't cost anything. It's easy to access. So please share this podcast with your friends and your loved ones and make sure they know that it's, you know, not for the kiddies, not for the easily offended. That, you know, it's R-rated language, because I'm not going to hold back just because grandma's listening or whatever. So even though grandma probably has a filthier mouth, way filthier than I've ever had, you know what I'm talking about. Share it with everybody. If you go to joshuapwarren.com, you can sign up for my free e-newsletter there. And it takes you 2 seconds. You put your name in, and when you do that, that means, for one thing, you instantly receive a digital good luck charm. And then, from there on, I can write to you directly. And I don't have some secretary or some agent or some representative. I just sit down at my laptop, and I type you a note and send it to you. And you'll get it, just like it was intended to be sent, typos and all. It's just a regular email from me to you. I don't advertise other people's shit on it. I don't sell other people's shit. You know what I'm saying? It's not like I pay for this service, so you don't get bombarded with a bunch of spam and ads. So be sure you're a subscriber to the free e-newsletter. While you're at joshuapwarren.com, click around. Look at the strange pictures and the video and reports. And some of it's not very well organized, so you just have to keep clicking around. But just look at all the headings there under the Gallery of the Strange, for example. But make sure you go to the Curiosity Shop. When you go to the Curiosity Shop, you will see some things that you will not find anywhere else in the world. Some of it's sold out right now, but we're trying to get it back in stock. And then, like I say, be sure to scroll through everything, and at the bottom is where you'll find the Sunshine Simple Generator and two or three other things that are very, very fitting for you to at least look at, given the stories that I have read to you. And remember, you know, you don't have to buy anything. Just look at everything. JoshuaPWarren.com. While you are there, please click the link to this podcast. It is called Joshua P. Warren Daily. It's always short, always free. It is commercial-free, uncensored, independent. Independent. And when you're there, you can subscribe to this podcast through various means. Or just follow me on Twitter at Joshua P. Warren, at Joshua P. Warren, and I will usually tweet when a new one is available. So that is it for today. Once again, happy Paranormal Day, happy Star Wars Day, happy Tequila Day. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your interest and support. Thank you for staying curious. And I will talk to you again soon.